neurotypical kids and kids with disabilities working together as one. And the humanity that comes out of that and the kinship, the friendships, everything that was developed in there to me is what makes her studio so special. It's a community of dancers. So these are dancers helping other dancers learn how to dance. And that's all it is.
Hi friends, welcome to Think Inclusive. I'm Tim Villegas from the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. And what you just heard was our amazing guest this week, Dan Watt, who is a 2024 Emmy Award winning producer and director of the documentary Everybody Dance. I am recording from Baltimore, Maryland at the Baltimore Convention Center at the CEC conference. Dan worked for 5 years at Columbia Pictures in the film development department on films like House Bunny with Anna Faris and Just Go With It with Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler. Dan went on to work with people like Simon Cowell on the documentary film about the band One Direction, This Is Us. Dan is currently in production on an untitled documentary with Tony and Pulitzer Prize winning producer Daryl Roth in a documentary with Rosie O'Donnell. We're so thrilled to have you here, whether you're listening to or watching Think Inclusive, MCIE's podcast that brings you conversations with people doing the work of inclusion in the real world. Like I said before, we're here in Baltimore, Maryland for the CEC conference. Our CEO, Dr. Carolyn Teagland, is presenting on Friday, and I'm here as support, trying to meet as many people and talk to as many people about inclusive practices as possible and tell people about MCIE and what we do. In this episode of Think Inclusive, Dan and I chat about his film, Everybody Dance. And this documentary follows 5 students with disabilities as they learn ballet, jazz, and tap in Bonnie's dance studio, showcasing their determination, confidence, and the power of an inclusive community. Dan shares some great stories. I'm not going to spoil them for you. He also explains why creating an inclusive environment is easier than you might think and offers some great advice for teachers. And if you're thinking, I'm not sure this movie is for me, let me tell you that one of the things that I really loved about Everybody Dance is that it centers the voices of students. So you won't want to miss this conversation. Before we get into my interview with Dan, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this season, IXL. IXL is a fantastic all-in-one platform designed for K-12 education. It helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, tracks progress seamlessly. Imagine having a tool that simplifies what usually requires dozens of different resources. Well, that's IXL. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs, ensuring they're both supported and challenged. Plus, each learner receives a personalized learning plan to effectively address any knowledge gaps. Interested in learning more? Visit IXL.com/inclusive. That's IXL.com/inclusive. Okay, after a short break, we'll jump into my conversation with Dan Watt. Catch you on the other side. Dan Watt, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Dan, so for those of you watching on YouTube, you can see Dan, and you can see in the background of Dan is a movie poster. And Dan, will you tell us what that movie poster says?
Well, it says Everybody Dance. It is my 2024 Emmy Award-winning documentary that I produced and directed. So, yeah.
It's fantastic. And it is a fantastic film. I did see it. When we first talked a few months ago, mm-hmm. when we first were setting up this interview, but it's a wonderful film. Thank you so much for making it. And tell me right before we kind of officially started recording, you were telling me that it aired on PBS And you said they submitted it for an Emmy, is that right?
Yeah, and they didn't tell me, you know, I mean, I knew that they could, but I didn't give it any thought. You know, it's PBS, you know, who knows, you know.
Right.
But they aired it, they did a limited airing of it, and they submitted it, and then it got selected to be in the top five. And so then Michelle emailed me from PBS and said, "Well, congratulations, you're one of the five nominated." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "For the Emmys." And I'm like, "Oh."
Wow.
Because, you know, that's just, you know, not in your, you know, the average person's thought process.
Right.
And when we were there, it truly, and I always hated when people said this at award shows, "Oh, I didn't expect it." You know, and I'm like, "You're full of shit." Oh, I don't know if your audio, sorry.
Bleep.
But there was another documentary up that was about books being taken out of schools, and that's just such a current thing. I thought, well, they're going to win because that's, like, you know, in the news right now. And then they announced my name in my film, and I won. So here we are. Yeah.
That's amazing. So did you have was it one of those things where you had to go up and like give a speech and stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you're just over there in the, you know, documentaries are like over there in the corner. And like, part of my speech was, "I'm exhausted. They sat me way over there." I had to go upstairs, downstairs, around a railing, and then up more stairs. And I was like, "My time's going to be up before I even get
Oh my
there."
goodness. Oh my goodness. Tell us a little bit about the film. I know I've seen it, but I'd love to just in your own words, and for our audience, who is mostly educators, kind of the premise of the film and why was it important for you to tell this story?
Well, in a synopsis, I follow five kids on their journey through life and towards their dance recital. They all take ballet and jazz and tap at a dance studio here in the Valley in New York, in Los Angeles. And I started the film when the teacher made the announcement to the kids that she was going to do a recital, so we get their reaction of, "I'm sorry, what are we doing?" all the way through the recital. So the word dance is in the title, but it's not a movie about dance because I follow them parallel, their home life, their, you know, their parents, and they're telling their stories. So to me, it's more of a documentary about determination, dedication, confidence, and the community that has created in Bonnie's dance studio, which is called Ballet for All Kids. So it's more of that, and it's what do they learn while taking dance that they can apply in their everyday life? And that's what was my goal, and that's what was fascinating for me, is to see, you know, how the parents applied the discipline at home, how they would say, "You're going to do your homework just like in dance class for the next 50 minutes, you know, focus on this, and then we'll move on to something else." And just the repetitiveness and all those things, how it helped them, how they could apply what they learned in dance in everyday life.
And you show the story through the individuals that the young people's like words and thoughts as well, which I really loved about the film.
Yeah, I made I am neurotypical, and I gave it a lot of thought of how to film this and what to do. And I wanted to make sure that it was their stories in their words. And I was just offering that platform because I thought this can be a great learning tool for everybody, just to hear, you know, to be able to have conversations with the parents and the kids, and just sit back and listen. This is how their life is. And to be able to have that insight to something that we're usually, how many people, neurotypical people might have someone. I think everybody has someone in their family now that is somewhere on the spectrum. And I think that it gives us an insight. And the conversations, what these kids said, touched my heart and actually changed the way I think.
Yeah, tell me more about that, because you went into this project maybe with some assumptions about people with disabilities. Not to say they were necessarily bad assumptions, but you probably had a way of thinking. How did that change as you completed the project?
Well, I'll tell you. Well, first, I was there every weekend, Saturday and Sunday for 10 months. So these kids and parents became my family, and I'm still friends with most of them. But I also was a dancer in my early career and a dance teacher. So I was lucky that I had the insight of those two in my background to be an educator and also a dancer. But I can tell you a specific moment when I realized that I was thinking different. We were about 4 months in, and I went to Target for my last minute Christmas shopping, the stocking stuffers. And I was going down an aisle, and there was a girl laying on the floor having a conniption. And as I walked by, I went, "Oh, I wonder if she's on the spectrum." And I just kept shopping. And I got in my car, and I started to cry. Because I didn't think, what a rotten kid. What a horrible mother. Why isn't the mother handling this? Why is this going on in a store? There was no judgment. I just went on with my day, and I thought the switch in my brain had flipped. And I just was so thankful and grateful that that happened to me. And I thought, now I need to make sure that this movie, or try my best to see if I can make that m my movie do that for someone else. And all it was is because I was exposed to it for 4 months. And it just opened up, it opens up your heart and your mind, and you just start thinking different.
Yeah, I see a parallel between your story and kind of just this idea of exposure to one of the big messages that we try to tell educators is when you have learners with and without disabilities learning together and living together, playing together, then it's no longer this strange occurrence when maybe somebody is on the ground because they're having, some sensory difficulties, or, maybe they're making some noises that would be considered strange, or maybe they're moving in a way that is different. But when you're exposed to that over time, it's just like, oh, it's just that person. It's just that individual. And maybe there's something going on, or maybe there isn't. It's just part of the fabric of whatever the environment is.
Well, and if we just focus on our similarities, life is just so much easier. And that's what's so great about Bonnie's school is the title is Ballet for All Kids. And you can walk by the studio and look in the window, and you would never know if someone is on the autism spectrum or not, because she takes everyone. And 30% of her students are neurotypical. They might just not pick up quick enough. Maybe they're just born not quite as coordinated, and they tried a normal, ballet class or a jazz class, and it just moved a little too quick. So, you just never know. Or the teacher. I think as an educator, when I taught dance, I always offered four explanations for one thing. A pot de beurre is three steps. So I would go left, right, left, right, left, right. I'd go one, two, three.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
No. 2-2-3, 3-2-3, backside side, backside side. And I would show it because you never know what's going to click in your student's mind. So if you offer all these different ways in, hopefully one of them will work. And that's what's great with Bonnie. And I think if all educators can think that way, because it's just finding that way in that makes all the difference. And then it just can open up somebody's life. So I just went off on a tangent there and I don't even remember what you asked.
I ask something? I think it's just more of a comment that the parallel between, the inclusive, an inclusive classroom or school where the expectation is that everyone is together. And so I want to unpack what you said about Bonnie and her class, because I think that there can be some misunderstanding about these certain kinds of classes that maybe if you are uninformed, you think like, well, that's the quote unquote special needs class, where they're only, that's not a real class or whatever, And so, I wanted to point that out because I think there's certain instances where you can have, like an extracurricular activity and the emphasis is really on this is only for students or learners or children with disabilities. And it becomes more of a protective, like, no, you can't come into this class. You can't be a part of this class because this is only for, disabled individuals. But what was really nice about seeing this film and about kind of Bonnie's kind of way of doing it is that it really was for everyone. And so when you have spaces for everyone, then everyone can, it can be a safe space for everyone.
Correct.
And so, which makes me think like, why do you think these particular programs or classes are essential? Like you spent a lot of time in this class, like why was it important for this class to exist?
I think there's a key element that she does that in her class, every person has a shadow. And it's a dancer who has had 4 or 5 years of training, and they're all volunteers. Because some kids might be in the class that there's a girl, Dakota, who can't stand up by herself. So she's got braces on that she walks with. And they wanted her to be in the recital. So what these shadows and mentors did is they held her up, and they did the choreography with her. So she was a part of the dance that class did. But it also gives Bonnie more freedom to walk around the class when, you have someone who's had 5 years of dance training and you've only had 2 months. They can adjust your feet and say, first position looks like a pizza slice. So let's open it up like that. But what that does is it puts neurotypical kids and kids on with all disabilities together, working together as one. And the humanity that comes out of that, and the kinship, the friendships, everything that was developed in there, to me, is what makes her studio so special. Because some of these kids volunteered to do it for, how you have to volunteer so many hours for, mm-hmm. School credit and all that kind of stuff. And every one of them that I talked to sign up for like this 6-month volunteer program. And some have been there for 6-7 years. Some of them have gone away to college and then come back and volunteer over the summer because it's just an inclusive family for everyone. It's a community. It's a community of dancers. So these are dancers helping other dancers learn how to dance. And that's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can tell you how important or how amazing it is to do it that way. Is a friend of mine watched the film, and she owns a dance studio closer to me. And she said, "Can you help me start a class like this?" So we did it last Saturday, and it's all inclusive. So there's like a cute little boy, and the sister is in the class, and the boy is on the spectrum, but the sister isn't. But there are also kids, and there was another boy who tried to take a ballet class, and he's neurotypical also, but there were like 35 girls in this ballet class and him. So they thought, well, so he was, he was like, oh no. And he wouldn't go in there. And his mom said, well, but he loved that he dances around the house. So the mom said, can we try this class? And, now I'm forgetting, my friend said, sure, of course. Cause there's only 15. It's in a smaller studio. But then she took her dancers who have 5-6 years from her dance company, and they were the mentors in that mm-hmm. class. And again, yeah. It was a dancer with a dancer. Now, these girls are traditionally like Russian trained ballerinas. Francesca is really tough. They're in a black leotard, pink tights, and their hair in a bun. Everybody in the studio, that's it. So they're not used to talking a whole lot except dance. They walked in there, and it just turned into older dancers helping younger dancers. Everything else just melted away. There was nothing else mattered. It was, okay, these are the steps we're learning now. And they would help each one of their, the younger kids just figure it out. And I just, Francesca and I were out in the hallway crying, because to just see how nothing had to be said, it just happened. Everything fell into place, and it was a 15-year-old dancer helping a 9-year-old dancer. And to witness it and witness it happen within 10 minutes, that it was just the love of dance and everything disappeared. All we could do was cry. And you just realize that you could apply that in any area of your life if you just are open to it. How cool is that?
So cool. And while you were talking, it reminded me, there's this, I'm not sure if you would call it a strategy or not, but there's this method to further inclusive practices in schools, and it's called like peer support. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a lot of research around peer support that, if you're listening and you're wondering, what that means, if you just, if you start Googling research about peer support and inclusive education, you'll find some really interesting articles about it. But and basically the research says that when you have neurotypical students who are tutors for learners with disabilities in like a general education class or an inclusive classroom, that it's beneficial not only for the learner with a disability, but also for the peer tutor. And so It's actually a very underutilized method in kind of in schools, but you're essentially taking that model and using it in a dance class, or you could use it anywhere, in, like you said, in any kind of environment.
Yeah, 100%. And I think everybody's life is just better that way. And I think back to when I worked at Columbia Pictures, and I was new there. You start as an intern and someone helps you learn this. This is what you do when we give notes on a script. This is how we do it. This is what we do with this. This is what we do here. So we all have mentors and teachers in our life that help us get to the next level. So there I was, thrown into this world of film and television, not knowing it. I knew how to produce because I produced live theater, but I never produced film and television. But the boss saw that I had something, and it was just taking what I knew and turning it into their way. And there were just people that held my hand and walked me along that path. Well, why would it be any different for someone who has autism or who has Down syndrome? It got me my job. It got me to the next level. It got me to the next thing. So it baffles my mind now, because I've gone through it, that this is just not used everywhere, and accessible everywhere, because we all use tutors, we all use mentors, we all need them in our life. So okay, here we go. It's not a big deal.
Right, exactly. When you're thinking about the film, is there a particular story arc that maybe highlights the message of the film? I know maybe the message isn't like intentional, like you don't go out like making a film to have a message, but kind of a message that emerges. Was there one that really sticks out to you?
Well, yeah, there's a quote from Alfred Hitchcock that Morgan Spurlock, who was my mentor through all of this, when I would cry and text him at midnight. And Alfred Hitchcock said something along the lines of, in a film, the director is God. In a documentary, the people in it are the director, and you have to just follow them. So I was so glad that I knew that, because, I had to adjust to whatever stories were being told in front of me. And there's two that I absolutely love. And I'll tell you one to show how if we work together as a community, we can apply these lessons and how it will help anyone in their life, in other areas of their life. There's the girl, Maddie, who has Down syndrome. Well, what Bonnie does in her dance class is, on the floor, everybody has a square and they're in different colored pieces of tape. And I think Maddie's was lime green. And when Maddie would step outside of her box, Bonnie would go, "Oh, where's Maddie? Where's Maddie?" And Maddie would step in her box, and then Bonnie would go, "Oh, Maddie, it's so nice to see you." So Maddie realized that the green box was her safe place, and that's where she can talk and she can be herself and is seen and accepted and all of that. From that lime green square, the mom and dad then bought lime green placemats for her house. So she knew when she ate, this is where, this is where I should be. This is where I can talk. This is where there's structure and I'm safe and all of that. But it went even a step further. In her school, with her schoolwork, they put lime green tape around the edge of her desk. So she then knew this was her safe space. So it went from a square on the floor to where she can be safe and heard and seen at home, to in her, I don't want to say traditional school, but where she learned math and all of that. Then that teacher took that exact same thing. So they worked together, because this, for whatever reason, it worked for Maddie. And then they just applied it in the other areas of her life. And I just thought, look at how just by teachers communicating to each other, look what this just did. It just opened up Maddie's life in such a way, in all areas. And that is just it's communication, and then the part that just touched my heart, one of the parts is when Liam is sitting on the couch with his mom and he said, I don't feel like I fit in at school, but at the dance studio I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so many people can relate to that. Yes, he has autism, but I was a theater geek. I was, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. How many boys dance in Cleveland, Ohio? I can tell you there were seven because I was one of them in every production that ever went on in Cleveland, Ohio. There were seven of us and we went from show to show to show, seven guys doing Guys and Dolls. And then there were 14 girls.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get select style selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Girls with their hairs up under a hat, dressing like a guy. But to find my community in theater, and there's video games, there's so many different, we all want to fit in. And being able to find that space where you're with like-minded people can make you flourish and expand and find greatness. And that was,
yeah.
I was the producer, but I was also, in my mind, I had turned into the dance teacher, so I'm crying in his kitchen with his mom, and I'm like, wait, you have to film this. You have to just sit back and capture it on film, because this is the story that people need to hear,
Yeah, that's got to be really difficult if you're the one capturing these moments, and in the moment you become so attached to,
yeah,
the people that you're filming. Right. There's this, we made this documentary series, this audio documentary series called Inclusion Stories. And, I was doing some interviews at a conference in Baltimore, and it was with a number of young, like pre-service teachers, like people learning to become special education teachers. And the professor was a friend of mine. And so she said, hey, why don't you come and interview all of these young people, because they're really passionate about inclusion and inclusive education. So here I am with my recorder and microphone in hand, and we're doing interviews, and the professor looks over and goes, oh my gosh, that is my mentor, mm-hmm. The one that taught me. And here I am, the teacher teaching these people. And, it was hard not to get choked up. Yeah. because it's just so powerful to see people get passionate about this type of thing, about inclusion, about community. Right. And even though I was the spectator, I was the observer, I was the recorder, I don't think I held it together very well.
Well, even when I watch the movie now, there's a point, I don't want to give away the ending, but we end up with the recital, but there's the girl, Sarah, who was, I think, 17 and 18 when we filmed, walked for the first time. And we captured that on film. She took about 8 steps and she fell. And then there's the the part at the recital. And again, to see her walk, we just happened to be there, you know, and I thought, I have angels looking over my shoulder that are, you know, put me here at this time to capture this story. But again, you know, you started to cry. Bonnie's crying. Sarah's crying. And I'm like, you know, so you know, thank God my cameraman he was doing his job as just filming. So thank God he was focused, because this emotional wreck lost it then, you know. But to see that after 17 years, you know, whatever, and they still haven't diagnosed her. There's something not connected from her brain to like below her knees. Everything. So it doesn't transmit for the lower part to move. Well, because of all the repetition of 5 or 6 years in dance class, holding onto the bar or holding onto her mentor and helper, look what happened. You know, yeah, it took a while, but, you know, I didn't get to Columbia Pictures till I was in my 40s. So, you know, it took a while.
There you go. Yeah. Now,
who gives a... Never mind. Who gives a hoot?
You're going to have to pull out that that bleeper again.
I know. I said a hoot. I got caught.
Yeah, you did. Oh, my goodness. Well, like I said earlier, Dan, we have a lot of teachers that listen. So I'm wondering if you know, Bonnie's a teacher, right? Because she teaches the class and you observe that. I'm wondering, any clues to how you can create an inclusive classroom with what you observe with Bonnie, and then just your experience being with these families for 10 months?
Well, I think it's so much easier than people think. Going back to why this movie came to me, when I was a dance teacher, well, first, my idea was I wanted to talk to people who studied the arts but never became a professional in it. Say, did your mom make you take piano for 4 years, and that, you know, or violin or singing, or, you know, go be in the theater to get used to talking in front of people, but you never made a career out of it? What helped you in that during those studies? That was my initial idea. But I had a dream of a woman, Fran, and her two daughters. Now, this was before I started filming, so it was 18 years ago then, but probably 20 now. And both of Fran's daughters had autism. Now, figure, 20 years ago, I knew nothing about it. I have not been trained in anything in this area except now filming the movie and working on another one, but we'll talk about that. But I thought, why am I dreaming about Fran and her two daughters? I mean, what a weird dream to have. And I didn't give it any more thought because I really don't remember my dreams that much. But then I dreamed about them again a couple weeks later. And I thought, this is God pushing me. This is my higher power going, this is your way in. You can still tell the same story of how the arts can be applied in everyday life, but I'm telling you, do it this way. Go this way. So I trusted my gut and I did it. But the reason I'm telling you that story is I was in my 20s as a dance teacher, not knowing anything about teaching anyone with a disability. But I talked to Fran, and she said, we know our daughters, it might take them a little longer to get from jazz one to jazz two. And we've talked to them, you know, so don't promote them if they're not ready. You know, and they understand that Allie might learn a little quicker. So Allie will go to jazz two, but you guys will stay here. So then all I did was teach my class like I taught any other class. And I knew that the one daughter was sensory sensitive, so did not touch her, so just show her with my arms. And then after class, you know, talk to the mom, and is there anything that they had questions about? But I just taught like any other class. And then after about a year and a half, I moved them. As the kids get better in a dance class, you move the ones who know your warm up to the front. So you can go around and correct, and they're the ones leading the class. And I moved both of her daughters up because they were ready. And one of them started to cry. And I thought, oh no, I have messed up everything. Everything I taught for a year and a half is now going out the window. And she said, no, she's crying tears of happiness because she knows she's now good enough to be in the front row. And all I did was teach dance and come up with different ways to show and explain to them, but not just them. Like I said earlier, a pas de bourrée, if you give them five different versions of it, even it's the same thing, but you're offering different ways in what's going to click for you, you know, when you're playing basketball to, you know, to get it in the hoop. I can't do that. It nothing clicked for me with that. But, you know, you just offer different, you know what it's like. If one teacher tells you one thing, but you're sick of your math teacher because you've been there for a year, and another teacher words it just slightly different, it now makes sense. So as a dance teacher, I just tried to give all my students different ways to get into it. And I thought, and then as I went to the studio, I thought, oh my gosh, this can be applied everywhere. Mm-hmm. Just any kid should be able to go into any class. I think we put up barriers because we think it's going to be harder. And what are we going to have to do? And what is there extra work in it for me? And there really isn't.
So right.
And that's what I took away from all of this, because now I'm like, why not?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think you just said it, and I think it was really evident in how you described, how you taught your class, is that the mindset barrier was gone. Like, you already had the assumption that they belonged in your class, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, that this kid's not getting it, they don't belong here, you know, which is, unfortunately, I think part of the problem is that there's a mindset that's, if you can't keep up or if you can't do something yet, then you don't belong in this particular class. But what I'm hearing is, you basically teach them until they can do it. And then, and you expect them to make progress.
Right.
Yeah.
And everybody makes progress at their own pace, you know? So, and I think maybe it's because I was they labeled me the jazz boy in Cleveland. So I was the jazz boy dancer. But I think that social labels, you know, we are put in these categories, be it, you know, race, gender, class, sexual orientation, you know, and these labels, people then come up with expectations, but these are labels that other people came up with and applied them. And I'm like, well, what, but you don't even know, you know what I mean? And I think it's because I lived it. Mine was just a different label over here that these stereotypes then come up, can result in unrealistic and false expectations, if that makes sense. And I think that's where it might get stuck in this world, is like you said, someone hears the word autism and they now expect this, or, you know, because they haven't investigated or learned anything or been exposed to it. So they now have expectations and a mindset of what it is. But if you know anybody with autism, as most people say, you know one person with autism. But then you think of that and you're like, why do, but that's like any human being. If you know one human being, you know one human being, because we're all different. So then I just think back, I think, why do you even have to say, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism, because they're on a spectrum. We're all on a spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, life is a spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know, right?
Your professors and teachers are going to be like, what is this guy talking about?
No. I think this is a great conversation. And I think whoever's listening will immediately understand and see the connection between, you know, the ideas that you're talking about, as a, you know, a dance teacher and in this film. And I think it definitely applies to just educators in general. So I think this is a great conversation. I do want you to share, how anyone can watch the film. And then, you teased a little bit about a future project. So why don't you tell us about those two things?
Well, this is actually currently free on Prime Video and Tubi. We got Amazon Prime to offer it for free during Disability Awareness Month, and the response was great. So I would suggest all your listeners go there and watch it and then leave a comment, because if the numbers keep up, they will keep offering it for free. And I just think that that's a great thing. Don't just click the like button. You have to go leave a comment, because I talked to somebody that works there and they judge it on how many people take the time to write something, not just click the like.
Okay. Good to know.
And so it's free on Prime Video, Amazon Prime, and Tubi. And you can pay for it on Apple TV and Google Play, but why, when you can get it for free? And because of my Emmy win, I guess that, do you know who Rosie O'Donnell is? She used to have the TV show Community. Well, her child Clay has autism. Mm. And she reached out to me, because she had an idea for a film. So we started discussions and I filmed one day already. And I think that's all I'll say. Well,
it's going to be another documentary.
Yeah. And this is strictly going to be about autism, because Clay has autism, but it's about, I guess I can say it. There's on YouTube, there's shows that are object shows. They're called object shows. And one of them is called Battle for Dream Island. And it's like a sponge talking to a pen. It's normal things that people you have around your house. And then the pen talks to the balloon and the, you know, the cup, all that stuff. So it's everyday objects that have been created into characters.
Okay.
Well, there's a few there. I think there's three of them. So, but I'm going to talk about Battle for Dream Island only. We're interviewing all of them and the kids who watch the show. These kids started this show when they were 13 and they're now in their 20s. Last year, it blew up. Their last video got 85 million views.
Wow.
The autism community, for some reason, has now embraced these shows. And there are chat rooms and community rooms on Twitter and Facebook, all because of these shows. So, and Rosie's child, Clay, when they found the show, it changed her life and it changed her behavior in her everyday school. And she started taking they started taking drawing classes, and I've interviewed a girl who now is creating their own show, and she's working on different cartoon voices and voicing characters. So she's getting into voiceover work, and it's just how they had a convention this past summer, and Rosie took Clay, and Rosie said a third of the audience was on the autism spectrum. And she said, got to be something there. Let's
figure. Wow, interesting. I've never heard of this. And
well,
now...
either you've heard of it or you haven't,
well...
because it is like this underground little world. But now I'm going the last Monday of this month, I'm going to go to a convention for one of the other ones, you know, with Rosie to see the craziness. But I've talked to a few psychologists and read a few papers and professors and stuff like that. And what we think is going on, but again, I want to talk to the kids about it. So maybe if there's somebody in your audience, if they have a child that knows what this show is that here's a sponge that gets hit by a rock, and they both have personalities. Well, the sponge, because it's an animated show, says ouch and makes an ouch face. And then the rock character laughs at it. Well, then 2 minutes later, the rock comes over and apologizes to the sponge. I didn't mean to hurt you. So it's kids on the spectrum don't have to think. Like when you talk to, well, this is what I've been told. When you want to get specific answers and have a conversation, sometimes it's harder for someone on the spectrum when you all ask a big generic question. How was your day?
Right. Yeah. Because
it can go in too many directions.
Sure.
So it's the object show. The sponge said, ouch, made an ouch face and started to cry. It's all right there. You don't have to think about it. Everything I need to know is right there. And then the other character come over and apologizes. It's all right there. I don't need to think any more about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they think that, or the people that I've talked to, the professors and psychologists think that it could just be because it just makes it that... It's that defined, you know.
Yeah.
They don't have to open up 9 folders and then get frustrated, you know, in their heads to figure out what did the human that said to me, what did they mean?
Right. Know? Right. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, I will definitely check out Battle for Dream Island, and
you're going to watch it and go, what am I looking at?
And, and then maybe, yeah, if you're listening and you're like, I know exactly what Battle for Dream Island is, then, you know, send me an email
and give them my number,
message on social media. Oh yeah. And then we can
give them my email.
Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. Dancing Dan W on Instagram.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you.
But it was so cool that she wanted to continue exploring and I don't want to use the word exposing, offering films and stuff like that to get that feature kids with disabilities. But in this one, and again, telling their stories, this is focusing on autism. But how cool is it that this YouTube show, I met one boy who now is painting replicas of Picasso's and Monet's. The kid is 14, but he watched this show, started drawing the characters, then asked for colored pencils, and then went to watercolors, and then got bored doing that because it was too easy, that his parents went out and bought thank you cards that had all the, you know, the lily pad from, you know, Monet and all that stuff. And now he's painting those.
Wow.
And but look at how this show opened up the mind and a pathway to creativity that this kid is now flourishing in. And that, you know, and Rosie's like, we got to tell people about this. Not that this particular show is going to attract everyone, you know,
right.
It's
yeah.
anything, you know, I'm still a Law and Order fan, you know, Law and Order SVU, you know?
Oh man. Well, this is great. This is wonderful. Thank you for spending some time with us. Do you have time for a mystery question? Do you know what I'm talking about when I say mystery question?
No, it scares me.
Okay, good.
But
good.
I will find out.
So how I wrap up each interview with my guest is I have a stack of cards. And it's just a prompt card. And then I selected at random, and then we both answer the question. So does that sound okay?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Do you have your bleep button close by?
I do. I don't think we're going to need it, but we'll see. Okay. So this question is, would you travel to space if possible?
No.
No. That's an easy question. No. Can I ask you why? Why wouldn't you want to go to space?
I don't care. I think there's a... There's still so much on this Earth that I would want to experience, and I don't know if I could survive not having contact like this. Am I able to? First of all, the other astronauts would be like, "Shut up!" You know, I just could see myself trying to teach them ballet in space, and I just would have these conversations, and they'd be like, "Just leave me alone." Oh, so I goodness. Don't know if I could survive in an atmosphere that didn't have personal one-on-one contact.
Okay, that's fair. I think I would like to travel to space, or I would if I given the opportunity. I don't know if I'd want to live in space.
Yeah.
You know, like the people who say we're going to colonize Mars or whatever. Like, I don't know. That seems, I've seen The Martian. Okay. So,
right.
Yeah. I don't know about that. and Interstellar, both of those terrify me.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think I enjoy learning about space. I enjoy I enjoy looking at the stars. I enjoy the constellations. I enjoy all that stuff. But yeah, it'd probably be different. You know, I'm also a big Doctor Who fan. So there's part of me that does want to get in the TARDIS and go all the way around in different time,
right.
Across
time. Well, I would do like the last season of Doctor Who where they just went to different eras.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right. Yeah.
But again, there's people there. And to me, space is me in a capsule for 8 months.
Oh gosh.
Without Law and Order SVU. I don't know if I could do it.
Okay, so space plus Law and Order SVU, right. Then you're good.
Right.
All right, good. All right, well, thanks for playing along. Dan Watt, thank you so much for being on the Think Inclusive podcast. We really appreciate it.
I had a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
All right, welcome back. That's a wrap for this episode of Think Inclusive. Let's roll the credits. Think Inclusive is brought to you by me, Tim Villegas. I handle the writing, editing, design, mixing, and mastering. This podcast is a proud production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. Our original music is by Miles Kredich, with additional tunes from Melody. A big shout out to our sponsor, IXL. Check them out at IXL.com/inclusive. We truly appreciate each and every one of you who tunes in. We'd love to hear how you're using our episodes. Are they part of your teaching toolkit? Do you share them with school administrators? Let me know. You can always reach out to me at tvillegas@mcie.org. That's tvillegas@mcie.org. And hey, if you're still with us this far into the episode, it probably means that you love Think Inclusive and the work that MCIE is doing. Can I ask you a small favor? Help us keep the momentum by donating at our website, mcie.org. Just click the button at the top of the site and chip in $5, $10, $15, $20. It would mean the world to us and the children in the schools and districts we partner with. Thanks for your time and attention. And remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.